So, because this week is Parshat Noach, and because it's really the beginning, you know, some of us were speaking last week on Parshat Bereishit, and I quoted Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill suggests that, you know, at the end of the Battle of Britain, there were two or three pivotal points in World War II. They were moments that had the potential to change the course of human history. And it's not that often where you have a moment, you know, there was a documentary series on Israeli TV last night, and I don't usually fall prey, but I could not turn it off. It was on the Yom Kippur War, and it had live footage, actually from some of the battle scenes from photographers who were there. It was really powerful. And there's a whole series apparently coming out on the Yom Kippur War. There were certain moments where they had intelligence, and if they had decided to act with it. But you can't say that that would have changed the course of world history. It would have changed the course of Israeli history. But there were moments in World War II that arguably one could say literally world history could have changed. And one of them was the Battle of Britain. Hitler had basically conquered most of Europe. He set his sights on the British, on the English. At the time, England was still considered one of the world empires, which people tend to forget when they look back. And it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that he was going to invade Britain. But he understood that first he had to weaken them. So Germany basically began to attack Britain from the air and what became known as the Blitz. And the British Air Force took to the skies. And over a period of weeks, basically the RAF fought the Luftwaffe for control of the skies over Europe. And the British were outnumbered. They were outmanned. But they were not outclassed. And when it became clear that the Germans did not have the long range, the bombers couldn't be supported by the fighters, I'll spare you all the details. There are many documentaries that can fill those gaps. It became clear that Britain had won the war for the skies. And Winston Churchill, this was really the first bright moment in a year of just horrible, horrible news. And he famously said, "This is not the end. This is not even the beginning of the end. But this is the end of the beginning." And that's this week. Parshat Bereishit is one last beginning. You know, first you have the month of Elul, and then you have Rosh Hashanah. But you're not done yet, because Yom Kippur is still the beginning of the year. And then you have Sukkot, and Shmini Atzeret is, the world is judged. But then you're still not done. You have the portion of Bereishit. Now we're finally getting into the meat. The meat of what we're going to be doing this year. And it's interesting, you know, we're entering a year which is quite challenging. If anybody would have imagined last year how much the world would change, we would have laughed. Who could imagine? I mean, you talk to people and you remember, I was recently speaking with someone and sharing with him sort of the last time I saw him when I was in the States. And I said, I feel like that was a different world. And he said, yeah, it was a totally different world. The world has completely changed. It remains to be seen sort of what will remain changed, what will continue to change, and what will go back to the previous reality that we knew, but everybody agrees that the world as we knew it is not going to be the same. So one hopes that this year things will get better. And comes along Parshat Noach. Parshat Bereishit, the first portion, is full of so much promise. Beginnings and creation and light being brought into the world and the creation of human beings. It ends sort of, or rather the middle of the portion seems to take us down a peg. After all the potential of that creation, it's almost as though the fabric of creation, or included in the fabric of creation, is man's potential for messing it all up, right? You look back at, I can only speak through the lens of someone in Israel, but if you look back at the lens of sort of how Israel has handled the coronavirus, you kind of feel in March that we were really on a roll. We had somehow succeeded in controlling it, and Baruch Hashem, the death toll wasn't so great, even though obviously every single life is horrendous. To lose a life, and the people seem to be cooperating, and the government had its act together. It seemed full of so much promise. They opened up the Seger, you know, the closure, and they were going to open up the skies. And then it seems like it took a week. It all went downhill. Our capacity to mess up what we do is remarkable. Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden. Shem says to them, "You could do whatever you want. Just don't eat from one tree." One tree. What do we do? Where is it? That's our challenge. Two brothers, Cain and Hevel. You couldn't ask for a more simple recipe. Right? It says, Vahi Cain oved adama. Cain was a farmer, and Hevel was a shepherd. That is a remarkable concept. Let's assume for the moment that we take the Torah literally, which one does not have to do, but let's say we do. Why do you have to have one farmer and one shepherd? Why can't they both farm and shepherd? Why can't they be partners and farm the world? The fact that we are created in Hashem's image and have such individual great potential is our own downfall. So the middle of the parsha, Cain and Hevel, first murder, seems like a disaster. But the end of the portion, Lamech gives birth to Noach. And why is Noach named Noach? This one will succeed in comforting us or in changing the direction of our actions. Right? Within the fire of destruction is always hidden the spark of redemption. The world can change. And Rashi there says that Noach invented the plow. Now the Torah doesn't tell us this because the Torah is not a history book. But you think about the enormous change that came into the world when the plow was invented. It meant that you could tame nature. It meant that the hunter-gatherers could now be in cities and cultivate the land and so on and so forth. So you start Noach with this enormous potential. And by the way, the potential here is greater than last week, because this is not the individual who thinks he succeeded. This is the individual who thought he succeeded, blew it, overcame that mistake, and now has learned from his mistakes and says this time it'll be different. And that has enormous promise, because this person is sobered to reality. And then you see what happens in this week's parsha, right? Atimalei aretz chamas. The land is filled. It's actually the end of last week's parsha, but the land is filled with violence. And Hashem sort of understands that this isn't what the world was created for. Lo yadon ruchi ba'adam. I can no longer tolerate man. Right? And we all know the story. Build an ark, get the animals, get in, let's go. The rain starts falling, the world is destroyed. Now here's an interesting question. Who's responsible? Who's responsible for the destruction of the world? So you say, well, the land was filled with violence. Right? The world, we blew it. But who created us? Hashem created us with the potential for evil. So, if we're created with the potential for evil, and we live up to that potential, it's hard to only blame man, right? You have to at least presume it's shared responsibility. Hashem should realize he made a mistake. You don't find that. Not only that, what is the pasuk? It's a famous pasuk in Yeshayahu. Isaiah, this is in Perek Nindalad, chapter 54, verse 9, Perek Nindalad Pasatet, right? And I want to just add, we're going to dedicate this shiur to Ephraim HaKohen Ben Yitta Miriam. We had a student a few years back, Duvi Grumet. I actually was in New York last year. We celebrated his wedding. It was beautiful. I wasn't at the wedding, but I was at the Shabbat Chatan. And unfortunately, his grandfather is fighting corona, and it's a little scary. So we should keep in our tefillot Ephraim HaKohen Ben Yitta Miriam. I apologize for getting at the beginning. Yeshayahu says that the flood actually has a responsible culprit. Ki mei Noach zotli. This flood is the flood of Noach, the water of Noach. Right? Yeshayahu reminds us that Hashem swore that he would never bring the flood of Noach on the world again. In other words, when Isaiah is giving us Musar, and he's reminding us that we have to do better, he does tell us the world won't be destroyed. You will be destroyed. The Jewish people will be destroyed, but you won't be the world won't be destroyed. I will never bring the flood of Noach. So who, if I call the flood of Noach, then it would seem to be that Noach is responsible, right? And the commentaries, in fact, the Zohar in Chelek Aleph and Samach Zayin, Zohar explains this, Shelo bikesh rachamim al haaretz. Why is Noach held responsible for the flood because Noach didn't ask for mercy. Now, this is interesting. There's a well-known Rashi, at the beginning of this week's portion, that compares Avram and Noach, right? Ela toldot Noach, right? Noach ish tzadik tamim haya b'dorotav. Noach was perfect in his generation. So Rashi explains there are two ways to look at that. You could say that Noach was perfect in his generation, but if he had lived in the time of Avraham, nobody would have paid him attention, right? It's like the comedy of calling someone like me a Rosh Yeshiva. Anybody who ever spent time around Rav Lichtenstein knows how ridiculous that is, and it's healthy to be humble, right? So Noach, if he lived in the time of Avraham, everybody would have laughed. The other possibility is the opposite. The other possibility is that if Noach was perfect in his generation, can you imagine how high a level he would have reached in the time of Avraham when the world was a better place? But the question that people miss is, why is Noach being compared to Avraham? Why don't you compare Noach to Yitzchak or Yaakov or Adam or Rishon? Why do you compare him to Avraham? So one way of understanding that is because both Noach and Avraham have similar scenarios. They are faced with destruction, but they react in completely different ways. Avram is told that Sodom is going to be destroyed, and he argues with God. In fact, we learn the halacha, we learn the tradition of having a makom kavua, of praying, of davening in a set place from the story of Avram and Sodom. When Sodom is about to be destroyed, after Avram has this whole back and forth, this dialogue, struggling, attempting to find 10 righteous people, tzaddikim, who will save the world, or save Sodom, or the five cities of the plains below where Avram lives, right? So when that whole dialogue is over, and it seems that Avram is arguing with Hashem, so it says, Vayashkem Avram Baboker, the next morning Avram arises early. Vayashkem is always a language of rising to your purpose. Vayashkem Avram Baboker, and Avram arises early, Vayachavoshet Chamo, and he saddles his donkey to take Yitzchak to the binding of Isaac, living up to sort of the challenge of the moment. When Paro decides to pursue the Jewish people, same word, right? When Bilam, right, goes out to he does something similar when he goes out to curse Jewish people. So this is a moment of truth, right? Avram refuses to accept that Sodom needs to be destroyed. He tries to do something about it. Now, the fact that Hashem has decided and it'll be what it'll be is irrelevant to the fact that Avram tries to make a difference. Noach, on the other hand, when Hashem says, right, get into the ark, they just get in. And the saddest piece of the entire story of Noach is that Noach and his family get in alone. So the Zohar, Yeshayahu, seems to hold Noach accountable. How could you not have attempted to change fate? Right? But and we could give a whole shiur, we could have a whole discussion about our challenge to make a difference in the world. Except that at its root, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. Right? The Zohar there says, and I'm quoting, "K'sheyatza Noach min hateva," when Noach gets out of the ark, he tchil lifkot, he begins to cry. V'yamar, and he says, Ribono shel olam, nikreta rachum, Hashem, you were called the merciful. Hayalach al rachem al briyotecha. Why didn't you have mercy on your creations? We can't even imagine. You know, there are movies that are made about what it must be like to awaken to a world post-nuclear holocaust. Noach is the ultimate holocaust survivor. This is not 6 million. This is the entire population of the earth. Right? And so Noah holds God accountable. How could you not have mercy on your creations? Right? Heshiva HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is not going to hold back. And he says, Roe Shotef, foolish shepherd. In other words, you are the shepherd of the world. Achshav ata omer zot. Now you're telling me this? B'sha'a she'amarti lecha ki otcha ra'iti tzadik lefanai. When I told you I saw you as righteous before me, what did you think I was telling you? I wanted you to ask mercy for the world. If we see a world that isn't perfect and we don't try to do anything, we're responsible. Right? But that's a very difficult idea. How can you daven? How can you pray? How can you attempt to act against the will of Hashem? If you look in Perek Vav at the beginning of this week's portion, Pasuk Gimel, right, the third verse, it says in the sixth chapter, Hineni mashchitam et haaretz. He says, I am going to destroy the world. So if Hashem isn't intending to destroy the world, then why does he say that? And if he is, how can you possibly change destiny? And this, of course, is a very challenging question in the reality we find ourselves in. How far do you go to attempt to change the reality around you? You know, there's a whole world out there that thinks that masks are ridiculous. What's the difference? And it seems to me that there are two groups, right? One group is the conspiracists, those who think that big government is trying to control us or whatever. And I'm not going to comment on this. You can imagine my opinion. But and then there's the group that are the fatalists. They say, like, what's the difference? If we're going to get it, we're going to get it. My wife shared with me that a relative of a relative, an older gentleman, very fine fellow, who's at least in his 80s, and he just decided, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to stay isolated, and I'm not going to stay away from my grandchildren, right? You know, his wife had passed away, and he said, I'm not going to live like that. Who knows how long I'm going to live like this? I've lived a good life, and if it gets me, it gets me. I'm not going to stay distant from my grandchildren. And at first I thought, that's crazy. Like, you know, you're only in your 80s. You could have another 30, 40 years. But then you think, well, maybe he's right. You know, I mean, we make a bracha in the morning, right? Hamechin mitzadei gavir. He who prepares the footsteps of man. And the Gemara in Brachot on Daf Samech, the 60th folio of Brachot, says that you make this bracha when you put your shoes on, right? Or rather, I'm sorry, when you have your shoes on and you take your first steps. And one way of understanding that bracha is that as I start my day, and I know that I have many steps to take, understand that Hashem has prepared everything. And it's put in your head at the beginning of your day, and if you get nothing else out of this year, that idea is worthwhile. Put in your head at the beginning of the day that whatever's going to happen to me today is what Hashem planned. You know, you get in your car, you're late for a meeting. Hashem decided you're going to be late for the meeting. Don't get frustrated. You know, you want to make your coffee, you're on your way, you're leaving on time, the coffee spills in your pants, you have to change, and now you're going to be late. Hashem wanted you to be late. Just be curious, why did Hashem want to be late? What traffic accident am I missing, right? So if you live life like that, then what's the difference if you wear a mask or not? Hashem says, I'm going to destroy the world. Who am I to daven against the Ratzon of Hashem, right? Now, you could say, well, it would almost be a chilul Hashem, right? I mean, you know, if Hashem is going to destroy the world, then there'll be, like Moshe urges Hashem to change his mind. I'm going to put aside for the moment how you could ask Hashem to change his mind, but okay. Right? Hashem says to Moshe, Lech red ki shichetamcha. Get down, your people have become destructive. Right? And the chet ha'egel and the sin of the golden calf. And Moshe says, wait a second, you can't do that. Lama imun mitzrayim, what are the non-Jews going to say? Right? Zechol Avram l'tzchak l'akov shenit bat lem sham. Remember what you promised Avram in Yitzchak and Yaakov. Right? And the rabbis ask, how could Moshe say this? One of the contentions of Moshe is that by definition, if you destroy the Jewish people, which is what Hashem is saying at least he's going to do, then that inherently is a desecration of Hashem's name. That the people that represent God somehow will be destroyed. And Hashem acquiesces to Moshe. And the Jewish people are not destroyed. But you can't say that here. There's no chilul Hashem. There's no desecration of Hashem's name because there's no world left. Noach and his family know that Hashem runs the world. Everybody else is God. So why would you expect Noach to ask Hashem to change the world? Right? So Rav Nevensal has a magnificent idea, which I wanted to share with us. And I think it challenges us to what's really going on. You know, we're living in a world of black and white. People have forgotten the gray. If you're a Trump supporter, then Biden is the devil. He's the sum total of all evil. And if you're a Democrat, then Trump is the devil. Now, don't get me wrong. It's hard for me to imagine that anybody reaching that level of politics is perfect. And I'm not about to comment on some of the issues or you know, my personal opinion. But to say that either one of those people has done nothing good would be absurd. To say that either one of them is totally good would also be absurd. And yet we've become so entrenched in our extremes. And you see this everywhere you look, you know, in the world of Corona as well. You either sort of wear your mask or you don't. You're either those who support or those who don't. there doesn't seem to be a middle ground, right? So how do you deal with that? And on a greater level, putting aside for the moment the incredible challenge that many people are having, one of the greatest, mitzvot is to find means and ways to bring people together. And we're living in a reality that seems to cause us to be apart. And if you could think of an experience, a Jewish experience that brings people together, it's a wedding. We're living in a reality where weddings are meant to be separated and alone. And if people come together, the police break them up, right? And I'm not debating the efficacy of it, but it has to cause us to pause. You have to take a step back and ask yourself, what's really going on here, right? And what are we meant to be doing? I mean, for a while, we were walking around sort of with our heads held high. Israel is a role model. Look how we've managed this. Look how disciplined we are now. Now you want to hide under the covers. It's horrendous. What is our voice supposed to be? So there's an interesting parallel, right? The Medrash, right, gives, and the Gemara in Makot gives us an interesting example that I think Rav Nevenzel talks about this in his Sichot, that I think parallels this particular situation with Noach. And that's the question of an Ir Miklat. Okay? In Sefer Bamidbar, in Perek Lamed Hei, in the 35th chapter, I think it's Pasuk Chaf Hei. So the mitzvah, we have a mitzvah that when someone accidentally kills someone, if there's ever really an accident, they have to run to a city of refuge. Now, how you define someone as sort of being held responsible to go to a city of refuge is an interesting question. The Bet Din, the court, has to do this. But for argument's sake, you're putting your ladder up outside, you're fixing a light, and you're not careful enough about how you put your ladder, and the ladder falls over and it kills somebody. So on the one hand, you didn't do it on purpose. On the other hand, you're negligent. So in that instance, for various reasons that are beyond the purview of this discussion, you don't get to go on with life as normal. You've made a terrible error. You left your car parked on a hill. You forgot to put the parking brake on. It rolled down the hill, God forbid, and killed somebody. On the one hand, you're not a murderer. On the other hand, you're not innocent. So you have to go to a city of refuge. Now, how long do you have to stay in the Ir Miklat, in the city of refuge? You have to stay there until the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, dies. That is a bizarre rule. What does the Kohen Gadol, what does the high priest have to do with the fact that you accidentally killed someone? Right? And the Pasuk says, V'yeshev ba admota Kohen Gadol. This is not some idea that we get sort of orally, halach lemosh v'sina. This is from Feirush Pasuk. The Torah tells us you stay there until the Kohen Gadol dies. So the Mishnah in Makot, right, you know, this is the best thing about preparing a shiur. You find things that I always thought this was a medrash. This is mamash in the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Makot in Perek Bet Mishnah Vav says as follows, Imo tehen shel Kohen Gadol. Right, so let's say that your son is the Kohen Gadol. He's the high priest. Arguably one of the highest level, most spiritual role models, teacher par excellence. And he's now the high priest in the Beis HaMikdash. Well, there's a whole bunch of people who are sitting in a city of refuge. They're stuck somewhere up in the Golan or down in the desert, and they can't go home. They can't get out. They can't go back to Tel Aviv until the Kohen Gadol dies. So what does a Jew naturally do? He davens to Hashem for the Kohen Gadol to die, right? So the mother of the Kohen Gadol, you know, who else is going to worry about the Kohen Gadol, about the high priest, but this is a Jewish mother. She's all nervous about this. I don't want people davening for my son to die. It's not good. It's an ayin hara, right? So imo tehen shel Kohen Gadol, so the mothers of a Kohen Gadol, misapkot lahen michya uksut, they would bring food and clothing. You know, Bubby's coming to the Ir Miklat with chocolate chip cookies, right? Michal's cookies. Kedei shelo yitpalu al bneihem sheyemutu. In order to prevent the boys from davening for her son to die. Beautiful Jewish mother. But it's a rather strange halacha. It's a rather strange idea. Why should the mother... I mean, imagine your son is the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim was a Kohen. And the Beit HaMikdash is built, and we make the Chafetz Chaim the Kohen Gadol. I believe that if the Beit HaMikdash would have been built during his time, he would have been the Kohen Gadol. By unanimous vote. Okay. So let's say that the mother of the Chafetz Chaim is still alive. She's worried that some guy, the negligent guy, the car sale, the used car salesman who didn't check the brakes on the car he sold, he's davening for the Chafetz Chaim to die, so she's worried about the Chafetz Chaim. I would think that the mother of the used car salesman should be bringing cookies to the Chafetz Chaim, because if the Chafetz Chaim finds out that Bernie the car salesman is davening for him to die, he won't even have to daven. He'll just think one negative thought. The guy will be zapped. He'll just turn into a worm. He's the Chafetz Chaim. Why does the mother, and this is a Mishnah in Makot, this is not some, you know, Chassidish, I mean, why would I have to worry about the prayers of someone like that? Right? Shlomo Melech says, it's a pasuk in Mishlei, klalat chinam lo tavo. If somebody makes a vain curse, there's no reality to it. If a person didn't earn it, don't worry about it. It's mamash a pasuk in Proverbs in Mishlei. Somebody comes up to you, I curse you that you should. If you know you didn't deserve it, don't worry about it. Right? And the Gemara in Makot, right? So what is going on here? So the Gemara in Makot says a fascinating thing. It's a Gemara in Daf Yud Aleph. It says, because at the end of the day, the Kohen Gadol actually does carry a certain responsibility. What is the job of the Kohen Gadol? His job is to elevate the generation, right? His job is to elevate the generation. If on a mystical level, if the Kohen Gadol, if the high priest was doing what he was supposed to be doing, there wouldn't be any negligence. People would be more careful. That's an unbelievable idea. That the Kohen Gadol bears some responsibility for the spiritual level of the entire Jewish people. Right? Now, it's interesting, a strange halacha, which is also the Mishnah in Perek Bet, says that even if the Kohen Gadol dies, this just proves the point, right? Let's say Bernie the car salesman, you know, sells his car and accidentally somebody gets killed. And he gets sent to an Ir Miklat. Okay? Okay, so then you got to wait for the Kohen Gadol, whatever high priest is in office, when he gets to the Ir Miklat. But let's say that Bernie says, I sell a good car. And the guy says, no, this car was negligent. I mean, the brakes didn't work. So what do? You go to a Beis Din, you go to a court. And the court has to rule whether there was negligence. I'm oversimplifying, but okay, right? So what if Bernie's car kills somebody, and then they're going to take him to court, and they're in court. But before the court rules, the Kohen Gadol dies, and a new one is appointed. So what happens to Bernie? On the one hand, Bernie's bummed, because if he would have gotten a verdict a day earlier, he would have only spent a day in an Ir Miklat. On the other hand, maybe the new Kohen Gadol is 19 years old. He's going to be stuck for 100 years, right? So the halacha is that if the new Kohen Gadol is appointed before the verdict, the shogeg goes free only when the new Kohen Gadol dies. That's an unbelievable halacha. Right? How could that be? So the Gemara in Makot says, Hayalo levakesh rachamim, shi gamer dino l'schut v'lo bikesh. Because the new Kohen Gadol right away should be finding out that there's someone who is about to be, who's in court, and his verdict is going to sentence him to an Ir Miklat, and it should bother him enough to go ask the Beis Din to be merciful. And if he didn't do that, he's partially responsible. That's how far the responsibility of a Jewish leader goes, right? The Kohen Gadol should interfere with justice in the courts. So if Nevenzel suggests that there's a chiyuv of limud zchus, that you as a leader have a responsibility, first of all, to view someone favorably, to assume the best about a person. You have a responsibility to influence other Jewish leaders to see someone favorable. You know, there's actually a great example of this. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin says that it's in Perek Aleph, in order to find the person guilty of death, you need a Beis Din, what's called a Sanhedrin Ketana. You need a court of 23 judges. Three judges, no matter how giant they are as Torah scholars, cannot rule in a capital case. You have to have 23 judges. And there's an interesting halacha, which some of us have discussed before. If all 23 of those judges rule that a person is guilty, he goes free. Because it cannot be that 23 leaders cannot find some reason to assume that they should acquit. So if every single one of them finds the person guilty, it must be that they didn't look at it seriously enough. In fact, there's even a special halacha that if you're the 23rd judge and you're convinced this guy is guilty, but if you say he's guilty, he's going to go free, you're not allowed halachically to say he's innocent in order that he should go free, because midvar sheker terchak, you're not allowed to bear false testimony or give a false verdict. That's how important it is for a leader to always see the positive. I remember many, many years ago, there was a tremendous Torah scholar, and he announced, or his court announced, that he was going to give an address. This was in the days before the internet. All people had to watch was the news on TV, and there was only one channel, right? It was Kol Yisrael. And he was going to address, they rented out a stadium. They mamash rented out a stadium in Tel Aviv, and 60,000 people attended this for his address. And you could almost sense that the Jewish people were listening. Like, he wanted to address the Jewish public, which was not a normal thing. And they televised it. And he started railing. Maybe some of the older amongst you will remember this. He started railing against the secular, the reform, people who eat rabbits and pigs and whatever. And I don't judge the Gadol. That's why I'm not mentioning his name, because maybe, I don't know, maybe he had a different idea. But I remember thinking, what a lost opportunity. And I'm not the only one who thought this. What a lost opportunity. And you could imagine the newsways were filled. He calls us rabbit eaters, those freeloaders who don't go to the army. You could imagine how much enmity and hatred and just horrible what came out of this. And I remember thinking, what would have happened if he would have said, I know that some of you maybe won't even go to synagogue on Yom Kippur, but you know what? You're wearing holy priestly clothing in your green army uniforms. What a different world we would be living in, right? A leader has a responsibility to be melamed zchus, right? And if a bezdin has no dissenting vote, therefore, if somebody couldn't find the positive, right, then he goes free. So leaders have a responsibility to see the world differently. That's idea number one. And before we use that to explain this entire issue, I just want to share with you another idea. There's an interesting question. There's a Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Nun Tet, famous story. I'm not going to quote you the whole story. It's called, it's an Agarta. It's a story in the Gemara. It's known as the story of the Tanur Shel Achnai. It's a certain type of oven that was built, and the rabbis were debating whether this particular type of oven causes things inside it to become impure or they remain pure. And Rabbi, in this particular story, right, Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with the Chachamim. He disagrees with the sages. Now, the rule is that halacha, you paskin like the sages, because we have a verse, Acharei Rabbim Latot, we always follow the majority in such a ruling, and Eliezer was the dissenting opinion. He was an individual opinion, just like on the Supreme Court. But Eliezer isn't done. Eliezer says, you know, if I'm right, let a tree be uprooted. A tree gets uprooted. Chacham said, we don't care, follow the majority. And then Eliezer says, well, if I'm right, let the wall of the Beis Medrash sort of fall over. And the wall of the Beis Medrash falls over. I'm oversimplifying the Gemara. And finally he says, if I'm right, let a heavenly, he was so sure he was right. If I'm right, let a heavenly voice come out and say, right, that Allah is like me. And a heavenly voice comes out and says, Malachem etzel Rabbi Eliezer, shalacha kamoto b'chol makom. What are you arguing with Rabbi Eliezer? Allah is like him. So you would think, okay, it's a heavenly voice. So the rabbis answer, Ein mashgichin bebatkol. You don't listen to a heavenly voice. Lo bashamayimi. Halacha isn't in the heavens. Hashem gave it to us, and we have to rule halachli. Okay. But there's another Gemara. This is a Gemara you can find in Erevin and Daf Yud Gimelam and Beis. It also appears in Yavamos, I think in Yaf Yud Dalet, but it's definitely in Erevin. And there's a well-known machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. And there's a big debate, who would we paskin like? And a bat kol comes out, the heavenly voice comes out, and says, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Both of these opinions have value. They're both the word of Hashem. V'alacha g'beit Hillel. But halacha is like Beit Hillel. And the Gemara explains that based on that bat kol, that's why we paskin like Beit Hillel. And it tells us why we paskin like Beit Hillel. Why we really like Beit Hillel. So I don't understand. If ein mashgichin be'bat kol, if you don't paskin like a heavenly voice, then how could it be that we paskin like, that we rule like Beit Hillel? Because of a heavenly voice, right? Just say that you can follow either. Do we paskin like a bat kol or not? So the truth is that in the machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, the Gemara is not being koveh halacha. That's not a debate between two opposing opinions where we have to decide which one is right. The Gemara first makes the point and says, it's actually a brayta, that both of them are right. The bat kol is not telling me which one of them is halachically correct. The bat kol is telling me they're different. And the world needs the voice of Beit Hillel. Because Beit Hillel, that particular, and by the way, That generation, that particular time, and we're still living in that time, needs the opinion of Beit Hillel. It needs to see a more flexible world. It needs to understand where a person is coming from. Now that's a whole discussion about the difference between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. The responsibility of the rabbis is not to see the negative, it's to elevate the positive. We bear responsibility for the generation. You know, there was a terrible story, I think. I don't remember if it was last year, the year before. There was a minister here, a minister of health, recently resigned. Talmud Chacham, you know, knowledgeable in Torah, representing Torah, did certain things that were great for the country, did certain things that were not. And at one point they asked him, he was the dissenting vote that refused to allow, you know, sort of reform, I don't like the labels, but for the purpose of this vignette, the reform and the like, to have a space to pray according to their customs at the Western Wall, the Southern Excavations. And so they asked him in an interview, why will you not allow the reform to do? Like, what would it take? Like, why won't you allow them? And his answer was, because the reforming are not Jews for me. They will never have a place at the Kotel. And I remember reading this. Now, just to be fair, you can't assume reality based on what you read in the newspapers. And I don't know what he really said, and I don't know if that was what he said. I didn't see the interview. But even just the quote that somebody could be quoted as, I'd like to believe that if somebody quoted me saying that, somebody would say that can't be. That person could never say that. So the fact that everybody believes that he said that, even I don't know if it's true, is such a horrendous thing. And you got to ask, you got to take a step back, say, what is our goal? What is our goal as leaders? What is the goal of a Rav? What is the goal of a yeshiva student? What is the goal of the Jewish people vis-a-vis the world? The goal is not to be right. Of course you want to be right, but the goal is to bring everyone else up to that right. Noach is held responsible. By the way, it's interesting. The Medrash tells us, fascinating, the Medrash tells us that Noach was actually the Kohen Gadol, right? There's a Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah, it says, Adam, right, im korbano lavash bigdei Kohen Gadol. When Adam offers up his sacrifice, there's a whole sacrifice that he offers in the Medrash, sort of, you know, in the process of the chait of Eitz Hadat, and one opinion is after the story of Cain and Hevel, lavash bigdei Kohen Gadol. He wore the priestly clothing, the high priest's clothing. Kevan Shemet, when he died, Adam Mesarol Shet, he passed them on to Shet, his son. And when Shet died, Mesaran the Mitushelach. Umitushelach Lenoach. Noach was the Kohen Gadol of the world. He was the high priest of the world, right? The goal of the Kohen Gadol is that his avoda, his service, his ability to inspire his environment, that the energy that it creates is meant to elevate the world. And if the Kohen Gadol would elevate the world, then the psak, the din of the Sanhedrin, the way the courts would view halacha would be different. And it's true that people can have a claim on the Kohen Gadol who could die as a result. And that's why the mother is nervous about it. Noach's tefillah could have elevated the world, and the schut, the merit, might well have averted the flood. Now, I want to suggest something. This is a very dangerous thing to do. You know? Something's wrong. You know, the Rambam in Hilchot Deot says there's a debate in the Girsa, in the Nusach, in the words, but there is certainly many versions of the Rambam that say that the whole point of a person being balanced in Hilchot Deot and the laws of character development are Kadesh Yeshalim Begufo, that a person has to be physically whole. And what we suggested in our studies in Araita is that if a person is off balance, right, so I see some of the alumni here are like smiling, there will always be a physical manifestation. There's always a manifestation. There's some physical, right? If you're off balance, there'll be a physical manifestation. You know, you look at a kid who's not sleeping enough, he looks exhausted. You see a person's not eating well, he looks gaunt. You see a person is stressed, he feels it in his stomach. Or you can look at a person and say, what's going on? If the world is going through such a physical imbalance that the countries are closed down, that hospitals are full of people on ventilators, that people have to walk around with masks. We are, all of us, doing something wrong. Something is off balance. And it's not about whether you voted for Trump or you're going to vote for Biden. There's something much bigger going on. Now, I don't know what the world has to learn from this. And I'm not sure what the Jewish people have to learn for this, but I can tell you what we as individuals have to learn for this. We're not doing our job. You know, I read an article about the death of the chief rabbinate. Just such a sad article. And it was obviously written with someone by someone with an axe to grind. But I remember thinking, like, you know, nobody, I never saw. I've been in Israel now since 1980, what is that, 40 years almost. I never saw anybody write an article about Rav Lichtenstein ripping him to shreds. Never. Because you couldn't rip a person like that to shreds. He was such an incredible human being. I never saw anybody write about Rav Nevenzel. What a pig. You couldn't say that. People would just laugh. We have to be better. By becoming better, we live up to our responsibility. It's not about giving the world mussar. It's not about telling everybody what people are doing wrong. We're all screaming, how come they don't wear masks? How come they're protesting? How come they're going to weddings? We haven't created the energy of a society that causes people to realize we can be better. And it starts, each of us, with ourselves. I think that's the message of Noach. Look, Hashem knew that the world is going to be destroyed. It can't be that Hashem says, oh, what a mess. Hashem created the world in order to destroy it so that he could rebuild it. This whole journey of Noach is meant to teach us something. The world was meant to experience Corona, and it's meant to be experiencing it now. And Bezrat Hashem will overcome it. But in the process, we have this opportunity to think about, how do we really make the world better? And I think maybe that's the message of Parshat Noach, right? Even while we're still struggling with this plague, what can we do? You know, I like to bike. It took me years to find an exercise that I could do. I have some knee injuries back from the army, and I love bicycling. And during most of the time, sometimes they restrict your biking, but at least here in Israel, even when they put us under closure and you couldn't leave your house for like 1,000 yards, you can go biking. And one of the things I love, sometimes I'll bike, I can only bike at the end of the day, is I catch mincha. Like I always daven, the yeshiva davens early mincha. I got in the habit of davening early mincha, like the afternoon service. So I'm riding around Efrat, and you pass by like 20, 30 minyanim. It's beautiful. People are out on the street, and they're just ashraying. And I ride through this minyan and that minyan, and you know, they're in the middle of the street, so I have to make sure not to hit a mincha guy, but you know. And it's just, it is something powerful. We have the ability to elevate our communities, and it begins with elevating ourselves. So that's a little bit of thought for the portion of Noach, just to share as an idea. It's not really the answer to the question. I'll just finish with one last thought that comes from Rabbi Sacks. You may have heard that Rabbi Sacks is not well. We should have in mind as well for him that he should have a refuah shlema. I had his name in my Misha Berach list, but if anybody needs it, you can WhatsApp me. So I apologize for not, if anybody knows it, you can yell it out now. But we should have in mind also for him that he should have a refuah shlema, a very special person. So he has an idea in one of his articles, a beautiful idea. It says, you know, we're supposed to imitate Hashem, right? Imitat Yodei, right? Lidamot bidrachav. It's the first mitzvah in the Rambam's Hilchot Deot, to imitate Hashem. And therefore, everything about Hashem we have to imitate. So he points out that in these weeks, we see that Hashem is the creator. So we're supposed to imitate Hashem as the creator. Well, how do you imitate Hashem as the creator? So he points out that there are really three stages of a creation. The first stage is Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or. Right? Yehi, let it be. God says, let it be. Then it says, Vayehi Or. And it was. And then it says, Vayar Elokim Et Haor Ki Tov. And God saw that it was good. So the first stage is, I have to decide, what do I want? How is the world? What needs to change? What can I do to make the world better? Then the second is, I have to make it better. I have to do that. But the third is, I have to be able to look at it and see it as good. Seeing something as good is a creative act. And if I'm reading an article and I see that people, either people with, you know, earrings and bald heads with no kippot are protesting together, or people with long kapotas are dancing together, it doesn't matter. If I can't see the good there, then something's wrong. If all I see is the bad, something's wrong. And I think that's the message of Noach. That's a little bit of food for thought. I wish everybody, first of all, I'm just going to put this on pause.